Page 254, The Author as Producer, footnote 1, text by Walter Benjamin. This essay, written in 1937, represents one extreme of the spectrum of Benjamin's aesthetic positions. It was formulated under the strong influence of Brecht in the context of Soviet discussions about the function and task of literature in a socialist society or socialist movement. The reader should concentrate on Benjamin's attempt to use his conceptual apparatus, developed in the context of historical research in defense of the possibility of an entire new political relationship of author, work, audience. Through Lukács and especially Adorno were right to point out the questionable nature of the party political presuppositions of essays such as this one. We must emphasize Benjamin's democratic corrective, the insistence on community, communication, and dialogue, the attack on the aura of the creative personality to the elitist implications of all Hegelianizing aesthetics. The differences between the Benjamin of this essay and Adorno's do not preclude some overlap. The reader will notice in this context Benjamin's stress on the critically cognitive function of art, especially Brecht's, that takes the reduced, alienated man of today as its starting point. Adorno has to replay that all political collectivists' art must inevitably compromise just this starting point. What he neglects is that to Benjamin, the endpoint, namely speaking to and listening to the mass of the alienated, was as important as the critical dissection of the conditions responsible for alienation. Page 255. Published by permission of Harcourt Praise Jovanovich Incorporated from Walter Benjamin's forthcoming book of essays, translated by Edmund Jeffcott, and to be published by Harcourt Praise Jovanovich Incorporated, a Helen and Kurt Wolf book, copyright 1977 by Surkamp Verlag and Harcourt Praise Jovanovich Incorporated. The task is to win over the intellectuals to the working class by making them aware of the identity of their spiritual enterprises and of their conditions as producers, by Ramon Fernandez. You will remember how Plato, in his model state, deals with poets. He banishes them from it in the public interest. He had a high conception of the power of poetry, but he believed it harmful, superfluous, in a perfect community, of course. The question of the poet's right to exist has not often since then been posed with the same emphasis, but today it poses itself. Probably it is only seldom posed in this form. But it is more or less familiar to you all as the question of the autonomy of the poet, of his freedom to write whatever he pleases. You are not disposed to grant him this autonomy. You believe that the present social situation compels him to decide in whose service he is to place his activity. The bourgeois writer of entertainment literature does not acknowledge this choice. To prove to him that, without admitting it, he is working in the service of certain class interests. A more advanced type of writer does recognize this choice. His decision, taken on the basis of a class struggle, is to side with the proletariat. That puts an end to his autonomy. His activity is now decided by what is useful to the proletariat in the class struggle. Such writing is commonly called tendentious. There you have the catchword around which has long circled a debate familiar to you. Its familiarity tells you how unfruitful it has been for it has not advanced beyond the monotonous reiteration of arguments for and against. On one hand, the correct political line is demanded of the poet. On the other, it is justifiable to expect his work to have quality. Such a formulation is, of course, unsatisfactory as long as the connection between the two factors, political line and quality, has not been perceived. Of course, the connection can be asserted dogmatically. You can declare a work that shows the correct political tendency need show no other quality. You can also declare a work that exhibits the correct tendency must of necessity have every other quality. Page 256. The second formulation is not uninteresting, and further, it is correct. I make it my own. But in doing so, I abstain from asserting it dogmatically. It must be proved. And it is in order to attempt to prove it that I now claim your attention. This is, you will perhaps object, a very specialized, out-of-the-way theme. And how do I intend to promote the study of fascism with such a proof? That is indeed my intentions, for I hope to be able to show you that the concept of political tendency in the summary form in which it is usually occurs in the debate just mentioned is a perfect, useless instrument of political literary criticism. I should like to show you that the tendency of a literary work can only be politically correct if it is also literarily correct. That is to say that the politically correct tendency includes a literary tendency. And I would add straight away, this literary tendency, which is implicitly or explicitly contained in every correct political tendency, alone constitutes the quality of the work. The correct political tendency of a work includes its literary quality because it includes its literary tendency. This assertion, I hope, I can promise you, will soon become clearer. For the moment, I should like to interject that I might have chosen a different starting point for my reflections. I started from the unfruitful debate in the relationship between tendency and quality in literature. I could have started from an even older and no less unfruitful debate. What is the relationship between form and content, particularly in political poetry? This kind of question has a bad name, rightly so. It is the textbook case of the attempt to explain literary connections with undialectical clichés. Very well, but what, then, is the dialectical approach to the same question? The dialectical approach to this question, and here I come to my central point, has absolutely no use for such rigid, isolated things as work, novel, book. It has to insert them into the living social context. You rightly declare that this has been done time and again among our friends, certainly, only it has often been done by launching at once into large and therefore necessarily often vague questions. Social conditions are, as we know, determined by conditions of production. And when materialist criticism approached a work, it is accustomed to ask how this work stood in relation to the social relations of production of its time. This is an important question, but also a very difficult one. Its answer is not always unambiguous, and I should like now to propose to you a more immediate question. Page 257. A question that is somewhat more modest, somewhat less far-reaching, but which has, it seems to me, more chance of receiving an answer. Instead of asking what is the attitude of a work to the relation of production of its time, does it accept them? Is it reactionary, or does it aim at overthrowing them? Is it revolutionary? Instead of this question, or at any rate before this question, I should like to propose another. Rather than asking what is the attitude of a work to the relations of production of this time, I should like to ask what is its position in them. This question directly concerns the function the work has within the literary relations of production of its time. It is concerned, in other words, directly with the literary technique of works. In the concept of technique, I have named that concept which makes literary products directly accessible to a social and therefore a materialistic analysis. At the same time, the concept of technique provides the dialectical starting point from which the unfruitful antithesis of form and content can be surpassed. And furthermore, this concept of technique contains an indication of the correct determination of the relations between tendency and quality, the question raised at the outset. If, therefore, we stated earlier that the correct political tendency of a work includes its literary quality because it includes its literary tendency, we can now formulate this more precisely by saying that this literary tendency can consist either of progress or of regression of literary technique. You will certainly approve if I now pass on with only an appearance of arbitrariness to very concrete literary conditions. Russian conditions. I should like to direct your attention to Sergei Tretyakov and to the type defined and embodied by him of the operating rider. This operating rider provides the most tangible example of the functional interdependency which always and under all conditions exists between the correct political tendency and progressive literary technique. I admit only one example. I hold others in reserve. Tretyakov distinguishes the operating from the informing writer. His mission is not to report, but to struggle, not to play the spectator, but to intervene actively. He defines this mission by the account he gives of his own activity. When in 1928, at the time of the total collectivization of agriculture, the slogan, "Riders to the Kolkhoz," was proclaimed, Tretyakov went to the Communist Lighthouse, and there, during two lengthy sessions, set about the following tasks: calling mass meetings, collecting funds to pay for tractors, persuading independent peasants to collect the Kolkhoz, inspecting the reading rooms, creating wallpaper, and editing the Kolkhoz newspaper, reporting for Moscow newspapers, introducing radio and mobile cinemas, and so on. Page 258. It is not surprising that the book Commanders of the Field, which Tretyakov wrote following these days, is said to have had considerable influence on the further development of collective agriculture. You may have a high regard for Tretyakov and yet still be of the opinion that his example does not provide a great deal in this context. The task he performed, you will perhaps object, are those of a journalist or a propagandist. All this has little to do with literature. However, I did intentionally quote the example of Tretyakov in order to point out to you how comprehensive is the horizon within which we have to rethink our conception of literature, forms or genres in view of the technical factors affecting our present situation. If we are to identify the forms of expression that channel the literary energies of the present, there were not always novels in the past, and there will not always have to be, not always tragedies, not always great epics, not always were the form of commentary, translation, indeed, even so-called plagiarism, placings in the margins of literature, they've had a place not only in the philosophical but also in the literary writings of Arabia.